Realty Nation is your host, Avi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty Podcast. Today is going to be an exciting podcast. We're talking with Brian Adams with Excelsior, and I want to talk about some key demographics, some secondary markets where he is focusing his energies and his essentially his world on finding specific opportunities in his space. Now, I've been on the secondary and tertiary market high for a very long period of time, and Brian and his co-founder, his partner, are super duper successful in raising capital and acquiring a specific asset class that I think you will appreciate. So we'll talk to him in just a second, but again, he is, whenever I talk to Brian, I always end up feeling like I do after going to the dentist. I always end up learning a lot and getting a lot of stuff fixed and my sights readjusted, and so it's always good speaking with him. Before we get to him, this podcast is brought to you by Think Multifamily. Whether you're a passive investor looking for passive income or you're an aspiring syndicator ready to learn on how to grow big and fast, Think Multifamily is the industry's leading acquisition and education company who's here to help you invest for your family's future every step of the way. For more information, thinkmultifamily.com is where you need to go. My guest, Brian Adams. Welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
Hey, Avi. How's it going?
Hey, good. You do a lot. And so during the intro, I'm like, you know, where do I pin his specific focus? And you guys are experts, like super duper experts in the commercial space. You understand how to raise capital, and you've been doing it for a very long period of time. Your portfolio is upwards of $200 million at this point, and you understand what it takes. Even offline, we've had conversation of raising capital, what demographics to look at, what indicators to take a look at, and even what markets to take a look at. So maybe give me a little background on that, and we'll jump right into some of these questions.
Yeah, sure. So first off, thanks for having me on. Always fun to catch up with you. But to your point, we are focused on secondary markets, which is kind of a Wall Street jargon term that can mean a lot of different things. Kind of like 18-hour city. I'm not even sure what that is, but it gets thrown around a lot. But the way we defined it are, these are markets that are outside of the top 10 gateway cities. So if you think about New York, LA, Chicago, Seattle, etc. Those are considered kind of tier one gateway markets. We're in that next tier of markets. So call it cities that are 10 through 50 in terms of population size. And the reason we like those markets is a handful of drivers, but, and we've talked about this before, what we do, we invest in commercial real estate, right? But when we break it down and we talk about our pitch, we're trying to solve problems for high net worth individuals, family offices, and independent RIAs, boutique wealth management firms. And the way we do that is threefold. We provide them direct co-investment opportunities. We solve for a double-digit cash and cash yield. And we provide them with all the benefits that come from direct real estate ownership, even though they have a fractional share of any individual asset. So when you put all those things together, secondary markets is a way for us to hit that cash yield without taking on too much risk or leverage. And so when we look at the world in terms of an investment thesis, we've overlaid that strategy and that solution set with demographic shift that we see occurring, because in real estate, as in a lot of things, demographics are destiny. And so today, millennials, which I barely qualify, but I do, are the largest working generational cohort in the history of America. It's roughly 75 million people. And for a long time, the Wall Street narrative was that these folks were going to be wearing skinny jeans, eating avocado toast, living in Brooklyn in a five-story walk-up and never having children or getting married. But the reality is the Great Recession pushed back that natural family formation phase a few years, but it is occurring, and it has been occurring for a number of years. So these folks are getting married, they're having children, and they're making choices about where they want to live, work, and play based on quality of life, cost of living, and access to education and single family homes for themselves. What's been really interesting is we've been addressing this for the last 10 years, and it's done well, but with COVID, it's really just accelerated that shift. And you're starting to really see this play out where even now that hopefully the pandemic is effervescing, it's still providing political cover for employers and employees to make geographic shifts and location moves that they had been contemplating for a number of years. So we feel like we're really well positioned to take advantage of these movements that are going to come over the next 3 to 5 years.
So this is the concept of moving that office from downtown Atlanta to the suburbs, and you get more space. Like, I am your key demographic you're talking about, right? I'm a guy that's thinking, okay, do I continue to live in the city, deal with the headache, the traffic, and the traffic patterns where everybody seems to urgently want to go to the bathroom? That's how they drive in Atlanta, right? My personal express lane, even though I'm only one person in the car, is to take HOV because I can't deal with anybody else. It's like the traffic fine, if I get pulled over, is worth it. Kind of like that's the kind of person that I am, which is probably not the best person to be. But I'm also thinking, okay, suburbia, get a house, 4-bed, 3-bath. If my office moves there too, then great, because I don't have to deal with the commute and I can have my own and build my own little bubble, which is where you're thinking 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ahead and saying, wait a minute, this is already the trend. It's already happening. COVID, like you said, has provided companies the cover to think about, I don't have to lease in downtown Atlanta at, you know, your $30 a square foot. I can go to Gwinnett, or I can go to Alpharetta. I can go to Douglasville and lease at 10 or 9 and get a nicer place, make it more family friendly, make it more millennial friendly, whatever that means. And I was surprised that you qualify. I didn't think I even qualified for the millennial definition.
Yeah. According to Brookings, it's 81 is the birth year.
So. 81 is the birth year? Jeez. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like a younger millennial. That's just weird, man. I don't know how to feel about that. But anyway, how do I take advantage of those trends? Do I start looking at the secondaries or maybe now tertiary markets?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly think so. If you're looking for stable, cash flowing, you know, oriented properties that are well insulated and that have performed well during now 2 downturns, so you've got the Great Recession and the pandemic for a data set now, these are fairly resilient submarkets and pockets of activity. And it's interesting because your comment about not realizing you're millennial, I think for a lot of us during our formative professional careers in our 20s, we all have a sense that we're never going to live the lifestyle that we did as children, right? That we rebel against the lifestyle that our parents had when we were growing up. But once you start having children, you realize that you want the same experiences for them that you had. And that typically means, you know, a single family home, or at least a multifamily space with more green area, access to transportation, access to education, and that house of the suburbs. And so just like our parents rebelled against the baby boomers when they were hippies, the same thing is playing out today. And so we see this boomerang effect in what we call kind of Big 12, Big 10 SEC country, of a lot of these folks coming back. And I think with COVID and this, you know, distributed workforce in either a hub and spoke model or a modified hybrid work from home environment, you'll see that continue. And just today, unfortunately, places like California, New York, and others, they're in a bit of a death spiral where, because of their budgetary situation, the only option they have is to increase taxes and decrease services, which will just exacerbate the flight of affluent folks and their respective companies to more business and tax-friendly jurisdictions.
We're seeing that in California. The entire state of California is becoming, I mean, I don't know how else to call it. It's this mass exodus of people, and they're going to Colorado. They're taking a look at Florida, and I don't know, for some reason, Austin, Texas has become this new kind of fintech capital of the South, and it's amazing. But even Austin, Texas has its own problem, right? It's like they're not providing enough resources and police force And every time I visit Austin, like, you never see a cop. Like, they're never around. It's like, wait a minute, what's happening here? But I feel you on that. Even for, I'm going through this right now, as I mentioned, I'm thinking, work from home, I need an office, it needs to be closer to me, I want a higher level of education. I'm not gonna find that in inner city Atlanta or in Atlanta unless I send my kids to private school. Don't have kids yet, but like, private school is gonna be $30,000, $40,000 a year a kid. Why would I want to pay the $250,000 price premium on something to live in like a Brookhaven or a Buckhead Brookhaven area to send my kids to Sarah Smith when Sarah Smith is kind of like not where it used to be? So I'd rather move out, not pay the premium, increase my quality of education, be happier, and my dog has a backyard, right? Like, that's, yeah, it just makes sense to me. And I'm fine with not being around people because COVID has taught me don't be around people as much, except when I'm on a plane every other week. So, but anyway, let's shift the conversation to, I have some notes here about syndication platforms focused on taxable high net worth investors and family offices. If I'm a high net worth individual or a family office, I'm always looking for a couple of things, as you mentioned. I'm looking to be a partner in a deal. I want to make sure that I get that I'm in a tax sheltered or tax advantaged environment, and I want access to exclusive deals. Is this a platform that you're thinking about building, currently building, or are there any recommendations that you have for these platforms that me as an accredited investor should take a look at?
Yeah, I mean, we've been in the business for 11 years and pivoted to direct deal by deal syndication 6 years ago now. And so today we have probably a distribution list of around 5,000 people and active investors of probably around 550 folks or entities that participate in our opportunities. And it's really about the way we came into the business model was because people that I knew within my peer group and social network, and then my wife's family office, the challenge they were facing was oftentimes to get access to these opportunities, they had to go through a fund-to-funds vehicle or really fee-heavy financial advisory setup, or they could go through a synthetic representation like a REIT structure or security. And it didn't really provide that direct access, obviously. And then hugely important is we only work with accredited investors, but they're all taxable entities, which I think is a big distinction to draw and something that investors need to inquire about, because oftentimes some of these larger groups, if they have a pension plan or an endowment or a non-taxable entity, you know, obviously the return profile doesn't take into account after tax returns, net of fees. And for us, that's a huge driver of you know, what we do and how we invest is we take full advantage of accelerated depreciation and cost segregation analysis. And hopefully the goal is, even though you're getting that double digit yield, your K-1 is showing a loss for the first 1 or 2 years, which for a taxable investor that can offset gains elsewhere in their portfolio, especially after the last year, the run up in the market, it's just a really powerful tool. And I tell people, you hear the adage, don't fight the Fed all the time. And that's certainly true in the markets, but you shouldn't fight the IRS either. And when you look at the tax code, it's really just a set of incentives and disincentives for investment behavior. And it's clearly oriented that you should own your own home and that you should invest in commercial real estate. So you should take full advantage of those opportunities.
I think that's what, there are a lot of high net worths that are missing the boat on that specifically, right? They obviously own their own home. Well, you would think the majority of them do, but they're not investing in the asset in commercial real estate, or I would also probably say real estate in general, the asset class of real estate. They're not paying attention to that as much as they should. Specifically commercial real estate, you get a lot of advantages there. What do you think would be, like, if I'm a high net worth, and last question here for you, Brian, if I'm a high net worth individual, I'm thinking, okay, should I take a look at multifamily or should I take a look at what Brian is doing on the commercial kind of office side? What would you say are some pros and cons of both to help me understand both worlds?
Yeah, and that can be a challenge, right? Because commercial real estate is a large tent. and it represents a lot of product types, or as we call in the industry, food groups within it, right? You have everything from hotels to retail to multifamily to office to self-storage, data center, distribution, industrial warehouse. There's a lot there. And so my advice to folks who are just entering the space or considering an allocation is, you know, understand what your risk-adjusted return goal is. And on a you know, risk profile basis, try to solve for what your internal goals are. So if you want to take big hits, big swings and try to get, you know, large IRR type returns, obviously you should be more in the opportunistic development space. If you're a little bit more risk averse and you want stable returns and more cash flow oriented thing, but a lower IRR, then you should look at, you know, core plus multifamily or office. But the way I look at it is every year you should have an allocation, and whatever that percentage is going to be different person to person, family to family, but you should have that allocation and you should spread it around, get to know other sponsors and operators and GPs, participate in different offerings that you see, build up your network, and don't try to kind of pick the winners, because it's very challenging to do that in the private markets, obviously. So have an allocation percentage, have a set, I'm going to do X into X amount of deals. And then over the course of 2 to 3 years, I think you'll get a pretty good sense of what you like and what you don't like in terms of risk profile, return profile, and style of operator, sponsor. The cool thing that's happened really over the last few years, and especially now with COVID, is, for instance, for us, you can go on our website, you can go to my podcast, you can listen to our webinars, you can hear me speak. You know exactly what we do and the type of deals that we focus on. Mm-hmm. And it might not be your cup of tea, but you can learn everything you want for no money. It's just going to take a little bit of time. And that's true, I think, across the spectrum. So now that there's all this content, I mean, what you all are doing in terms of educational materials and collateral, if you just take a little bit of time and focus, you can learn pretty quickly, at least the basics and the rudimentary aspects of what we're doing. But, you know, my advice is have an allocation, stick to it, and then kind of give it some time to develop, and you'll get a pretty good sense of what's the right fit for you or not.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Brian, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. If we want to get in touch and have questions about the commercial space, how do we reach out to you? What's the good website for you?
Yeah, I'm really active on LinkedIn, so you can look me up, Brian Adams, Excelsior Capital. Shoot me a note. I'm happy to connect. Or the website, like I mentioned, has a lot of resources and has our portfolio on there. And so you can check out some of the things that we've done recently, but it's excelsiorgp.com.
Perfect. Brian, thanks a lot, man. We'll catch up again soon. I'm excited to maybe have you back toward the end of the third quarter, maybe middle end of third quarter, to kind of get additional insights on where this year's been for you and just the overall economy-wise. But always good catching up.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thanks. I'll see you later. Think Realty Nation, this next segment is brought to you by Briefcase.email. Join thousands of readers and sign up at Briefcase.email to receive a free weekly newsletter for real estate entrepreneurs. Briefcase loves to have fun with their newsletter, so if you don't laugh, they'll give you your money back. Check out Briefcase.email to sign up. Let's talk about a couple of housing trends to watch out for in 2021, and then we'll wrap up this podcast. Number one, the rise in home prices. I think that's going to keep happening. For those of you that thought that home prices were going to come like absolutely collapse this year, yeah, no, think again. That's probably not going to happen. We might see a little bit of a correction, but I'm still not seeing a whole lot of that because there's so much pent-up demand for new housing that it's still a seller's market, and it's going to continue to be a seller's market for a while. Last year, Fannie Mae said that we were short 3.3 million new homes. For all you builders out there, real estate investors out there, take that as a sign. Number two, furnished living. This is kind of interesting. This is an article on thinkrealty.com written by our editorial staff. They're saying here that, quote, the growing popularity of furnished apartments in Miami and other major cities across the U.S. is on demand due to business renters. Many businesses have branches in different cities and prefer paying for furnished living space since they're there for a short period of time. With a furnished house, you don't have to carry your furniture and appliances. So I think that's kind of interesting. You know, people are kind of getting back to traveling a little bit. They're getting a little bolder with that. And as you just heard Brian say, they might be interested in moving their office from downtown to the suburb. So, you know, if that happens, then maybe there's even a cost savings there. Number three, we talk about the shift from the urban centers to the suburbs. Of course, that's happening. Thank you to COVID for making that happen. Now I can go take a look at that house that I want to buy in the suburbs and not have to worry about coming to Atlanta all the time. The traffic, can you believe it? And there are bad drivers everywhere. I get that. But who wants to be stuck in traffic? Even if you own a Tesla, like, come on. Number four, the rise in mortgage rates. The coronavirus pandemic dropped mortgage rates due to economic destruction. So we're looking at between 3 to 3.2% growth this year in 2021. By the time we reach the later half of 2021, we'll probably also see more interest rates rising. And then number five, of course, increase home sales. I continue to see that increase over 2021. Should be kind of interesting. And thanks. I've been looking at the wrong camera this entire time. Sorry, guys. Anyway, that wraps up the show. If you have any questions, get in touch. You know how to do it. ThinkRealty.com is where I live. Can't do the show without the help of our sponsors. Today's sponsor is Think Multifamily. Let's check them out. Go to thinkmultifamily.com. And if you have not checked out the hybrid conference and expo that Think Realty is having in Baltimore, go to thinkrealty.com to purchase those tickets right now. And that conference is September 18th and 19th. So you can attend it virtually. You can attend it in person. But make sure you check it out, thinkrealty.com. You're getting a buy one, get one deal on both the live and virtual tickets right now. What you want to do is register for two tickets, enter the code PODCAST, and you're essentially paying for one ticket. And you can do that by visiting thinkrealty.com/Baltimore. That's a wrap for today's show. Get in touch with me. You know how to do it anywhere online at Abhi Golhar or on thinkrealty.com. Until next time, happy investing.